All right, we're going to head over to the Zoom studio line here where we got Mr. Richard Welch on the line with us. He's a coal representative, and I do not remember exactly the name of the organization that you represent because I do not have my notes in front of me, and I do apologize, sir, but give yourself a plug of who you are and what you are representing real quick before we get into California's attempt to try to ban fracking, sir.
So I'm Richard Welch. I ran for United States Congress here in Texas. I'm a 20-year oil and gas industry professional, and I currently work with the Texas Public Policy Foundation Life Sciences Division. So we do a lot of advocating for oil and gas and coal and things of that sort.
So let's talk about this ban on fracking that California is trying to discuss, they're trying to introduce. Boy, I tell you what, you look at the headlines and you almost think it's a foregone conclusion, don't you?
Yeah, and it's quite pathetic in their attempts. They're putting the entire world population in danger by cutting their natural gas production, or attempting to, being that the United States pumps out 100 billion cubic feet per day in natural gas, and a lot of that natural gas is used for things like polyethylene, you know, for IV bags and life-saving medical equipment. So I don't think they quite understand the impact that banning fracking is going to have on the population.
Even more so, to go a little bit further than that, I mean, we've got, you know, plastic safety, we've got needles and syringes and all those different, but also you take a look at any town USA, generally it's anywhere between 50 and 70% of the city town's grid is for emergency services. Now that means hospitals, that means police stations, that means fire departments, but we're talking emergency services. Like, even a libertarian is all about emergency services. So this is really bizarre, really bizarre.
Yeah, and I don't quite understand their logic in this, being that about 90% of everything that you touch throughout the day in some way originated from oil and gas. I mean, just think about all the electric cars that they want to build. You can't even make the batteries without bonding them to carbon. And so just the logic of banning fracking or natural gas is quite, I don't even know how you say it, because they're progressives, but it would directly affect the progress of the human being on the planet. And so they're shooting themselves in the foot.
Well, that raises the question, is this being done on purpose? Kamala Harris is actively talking about reducing the population. She's talking about getting rid of fracking, and those two are going to be related. If you get rid of oil and gas, the planet's population will go down. And Kamala Harris, currently the presidential nominee for the Democratic Party, whether that'll happen or not in August is another story. But the truth is, we are literally seconds away from Kamala Harris being the president of the United States. President Biden dropped out of the race because of health concerns, et cetera, et cetera. But he's one sneeze away or one fallen stairs away from passing on to the next life. And that means Kamala Harris would be the president, Richard. That should scare some people if they want to end energy poverty, if they're humanitarians, because the words coming out of Kamala Harris's mouth are very anti-human.
Well, it really is. And, you know, thank heavens that, you know, she can't do it on her own. Nobody in the Congress or Senate would ever allow that to go through. On the local level, they might be able to restrict it enough to where it's so unfavorable or so expensive to produce that people start moving out and looking to frack elsewhere or drill elsewhere. But the second that it starts affecting the economy, there's going to be a pretty big pushback, and I don't think there's any chance of it actually happening. But you can bet your bottom dollar they're going to try as hard as they can to make it happen.
What can the coal industry do? They, as much as I respect the coal industry, the proof is in the pudding. I mean, we used to have 30, 40, 50 people mining a coal mine. Now we got six people and a bunch of robots. And by the way, the coal mines have reduced by about 90% too. They're retiring a lot of these things. That seems to be the template that they're going to use for the oil and gas industry. And when I look at the oil and gas industry, you're starting to hear people within the industry saying, the oil and gas industry has really done a bad job of promoting within their own industry, let alone to the rest of the people. And I know where that's coming from. We were in agriculture for a long time. I was. And so I've been around media, a lot of different industries. The newspaper, for example, is a great example. The newspaper had a monopoly for 100 years. The internet came around to their paradigm shift. All of a sudden, 10 years later, majority, if not all, the newspapers declared bankruptcy in some format. And so that industry completely shifted. It didn't go away. You still have newspapers out there. You still have reporters out there creating original content. And everybody, the internet basically is 90% reaction to the 10% of original news. Most of the original news comes from the newspaper industry. So when you take a look at energy, most of our energy still comes from coal, oil, gas. You see what I mean? It's almost like the same story's happening under the sun, but with a different industry. So just kind of your background in coal, your background in oil and gas. Let's educate the industry a little bit on how, you know what, maybe we can do a better job of putting that olive branch out there and really helping people become aware of these serious issues, because these are real serious issues. Like I said, if 70% of your grid is emergency services, there are a lot of people at hospitals that depend on the energy grid, Richard.
Well, that's the thing, coal and natural gas are very, very reliable. And that's what emergency services actually needs is 100% reliability, something that is always going to be there. Because if emergency services ever goes down because of unreliability, then the people are really going to be in some serious danger. If we can't provide that to them. Plus, coal is cheap. Natural gas is cheap. And so it's really beneficial to keep these money-saving options available. You look at wind and you look at solar, all the top execs, all the big investors out there in the world, like Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett said there's absolutely no way that he would invest in solar or wind without all of the major government subsidies that they're getting because they don't turn a profit without them. Whereas you look at coal and you look at natural gas, and they're providing a profit on day one just because it's so cost effective and it's readily available. I mean, I said it earlier. We put out 100 billion cubic feet of natural gas, dry natural gas, every single day in the United States. That is a lot of power, a lot of power right in our hands. And so we don't have to wait for a sunshiny day to have good power, or we don't have to wait for 20 mile an hour winds to have good power. We have good power on demand, reliable power every single day.
I got a few things I want to run by you as well that have not seemed to make the public conversation. Number one, there was at least a 15-year period starting with President Bill Clinton, and it went through, I want to say, all the way to Obama. So it might even have been more than 15 years big push for natural gas to the tune to where Energy Star, there's a whole marketing campaign for Energy Star. The government was giving out money so people could get gas stoves. There was a huge, huge government push to get people on affordable energy. And then they just ripped the rug right out and said, no, now you're a bad person for doing that. That is abusive. And that was directed by the government. And that is not talked about either in two forms, the abuse, the emotional abuse, and the economic abuse, but also the fact that the government spent 20 years getting people gas stoves. And then they just, within a year or two, say, no, you can't have them anymore. Like, what's going on there? How come nobody's talking about that, Richard? You ran for a U.S. House. That's a perfect political discussion.
Well, it's Wall Street. So, Wall Street decided to go all in and start actually punishing. They found a way to extort oil and gas companies and service companies on interest rate. And, Wall Street controls the purse here in the United States. So, they came up with a good plan, and they started implementing ESG. Environmental social governance. And they found ways to punish oil and gas all of a sudden, because oil and they figured that the world's always going to need it, so how can we make more money on it? And so the government is all in on that because it makes Wall Street money. And so Wall Street controls the purse. They make huge financial contributions to all of our political leaders. And so that's where that rug ripping comes out from, because if they take the money away, then government is kind of screwed.
Nothing will make you turn on the dime like money, huh? I
That's
mean,
right.
that'll make you turn real quick on that. ESG, environmental social governance. I'm glad that you brought that up. So I wanted to ask you about capitalism and the free market, and I'm going to tie in the ESG. And I'm glad you brought it up. Now I don't have to explain to you what it is. You're obviously an astute individual on that. So when we take a look at oil and gas. I said this 12 years ago and I stand behind it. The oil and gas industry, a decade ago, if not 12 years ago, 15 years ago, literally was the last bastion for the free market. Almost any other industry, the government had their hands in it. And the government had their hands in the oil and gas industry, yes, but at the same time, the oil and gas industry really had equal, if not more, control over the government. They respected some of the regulations, but didn't agree with all of them. Okay. Like the ones that were life-saving and helps reduce the climate and save, help save the sage grouse and things like that. The oil and gas industry was working towards all those things. But like everything, it's not going to happen overnight. But when I take a look at how the oil and gas industry's changed over the last 10 to 15 years, to me, it's the elimination of the free market that has really caused some problems. Because when I first got in this industry, if there was a roughneck without a college education working on a rig for 20 years and looking at that same rod, can figure out how to make that rod twice as cheap and go twice as fast, generally that company would then hire that person as an independent contractor. And all of a sudden, that roughneck became a business owner, became pretty, became the American dream essentially. Went and worked their butt off, learned to trade, figured out how to make the marketplace safer, faster, more efficient. And the oil and gas company would reward for that. Well, there's been a shift where now the oil and gas company's like, oh, yeah, we take that in-house now. And we do that in-house now. And we do this. And it almost like they kind of had to, because of all the different government intrusion, that they started reacting. And to me, I've seen the elimination of the free market, and I still believe that the oil and gas industry is the last bastion for the free market. So when I talk about saving the oil and gas industry, I also talk about saving the free market as well. What's your thoughts on that?
So you're absolutely right. Back in the 80s and 90s, The government was merely just, they were overwatch. You know, that's all they did. They made sure that there was compliance, and that was it. That was the end of their stick. You look at what happened with Obama when he started trying to mandate the 10% ethanol. That was the end of the free market when the government started dictating exactly what oil and gas companies had to sell in their product. So you can look, the government has tried to shut down oil and gas at every turn. They tried to do it right here in West Texas with some kind of rare lizard or something like that. Tried to shut down production. It's just hilarious. But the second part of that is when the government decided that they wanted to start pushing this green energy. And what's funny about it is these banks are making oil and gas companies comply with certain environmental regulations in order to obtain federal favorable loans. But none of these same standards apply to wind and solar because they have government backing. And so it's, you know, that part of it is the government's implementing socialized energy into a free market makes it almost non-competitive. And so you're absolutely right about oil and gas is not so much a free market anymore when you have the thumb of the government. Well, you have their boot on your neck and you have their thumb on the scale. So you are absolutely correct. It is no longer a 100% free market anymore.
I'll give you another example, the Inflation Reduction Act, which is known as the Green New Deal in Europe. It's other countries across the nation look at the Inflation Reduction Act and the Green New Deal basically is the same thing. And let's talk bigger picture here, because when was America started? 1492, is that right? Okay, 1492, and then we've got 1776. We have the that's actually when America was started, I guess, not discovered. And then we had Andrew Jackson, treasurer, right? If my history is correct here, so. I'm not trying to do a history lesson here. I'm just trying to say over the last 200, 250 years, America has been printing money. Well, the Inflation Reduction Act essentially prints 250 years worth of money. When you take a look at the trillions of dollars it represents, the government created an American 250-year-old economy overnight. And they are the ones directing the ship. To the tune, Occidental Petroleum is no longer an oil and gas company. It is no longer an energy company. In fact, it is now a carbon management company. So to me, that is changing the market completely. Shell is now flirting with becoming a carbon management company. So I understood when the oil and gas companies went to an energy company. It's no different when newspapers become media companies. Newspapers, you know, they offer video, they offer podcasts, so they're not a newspaper. They're a multimedia company. No different. Oil and gas, hey, we're going to get into biomass. We're going to get into maybe some solar here, maybe some wind here, whatever. Maybe try it out, whatever. We're in all forms of energy. But to actually come out and take out the word energy, and now we're in carbon management. Boy, as a former editor of 20 years, I feel I'm very qualified to say that is Orwellian. And I think people need to wake up and understand that there was a brand new economy printed, and the government is behind it. And through public-private partnerships, they are literally picking and choosing a new marketplace out there. Just to give you another example of how the free market is going away fast. I don't mean to scare you, Richard, but facts are facts, man.
Facts are facts. And unfortunately, take like Shell. You know, Shell is not an American company. It's Royal Dutch Shell. And so they're getting beat on both ends, right? So you have Europe on one hand that is really, really trying very hard to go 100% green, and it's just blowing up in their face. On the other hand, if you take out the energy part and you label yourself carbon management, then it looks so much better to the government, and it looks a lot better to the people. Also, here in the United States, you have Democrats trying to go the same route as in Europe. They have renewable energy that's so expensive in Europe that they just have to abandon in place because they don't have enough money to fix it. And no private investor is going to invest the money because it's not going to be profitable. So it's just draining the government. And unfortunately, you have a lot of these oil and gas companies trying to bend over backwards and almost abandon their principal means of income to try and stay in the good graces of government so that they don't get shut down.
Now, I'm not sure if you mentioned your political affiliation, but I'm going to go out on a limb and think you're a Republican. And I believe the Republicans have a little bit of responsibility in this too, because for a long time, the Republicans were the party of Christian values, of religious values, and the Democrats were mostly the government knows better. And in the past, Bernie Sanders and Ron Paul, they agreed on the end goal sometimes. Dennis Kucinich and, Rand Paul, they would agree on the end goal. Just how to get there was the problem. Like the free market should decide as opposed to government force. And to me, that was always kind of the difference between a lot of Republicans and Democrats was the Democrats thought the government knew morals, whereas the Republicans would look to the good book or, the Hindu or even, some of the other religions essentially do have a similar a plot, or even we'll just call it the Ten Commandments, because most of the religions are based on Ten Commandments. And we're talking values here. And when you do business with somebody, when you're out in society with somebody, when you're sitting next in the movie theater with somebody, it's good to know their values. So you know where they draw from. So you know if they think murder is a crime. You know if they think stealing is a crime. If the values are gone and now you have Republicans or people like Warren Buffett, I don't know what Warren Buffett is actually, if he's a Democrat or Republican or what, but here's somebody who was against government subsidies for a long time. Well, he was the first one in line to get them. He had no problem getting them now. And I see a lot of Republicans doing that where they're kind of looking the other way at the former value system because it makes sense economically. And it makes sense because we can get money from subsidies. I do want to have a discussion about the values and some of the Republicans who have decided to take that government subsidy instead of standing up and saying, no, absolutely not. Rebate that to the taxpayer. Are you, first of all, did you run as a Republican, an independent, or a Democrat?
I ran as a Republican.
So I'm not trying to be combative or anything like that. I'm just trying to have a civil conversation about the change of the party to the tune to where some people are called rhinos now and some people are called neocons and there's a Tea Party and a few other things. But what's going on with the Republican Party, and do they, what can they do to help the energy industry and the free market and restore some of those values they preached about for 100 years?
Well, so if you're a true capitalist, like most conservatives are, then you're not in favor of all the governmental restrictions. And so when you pull restrictions out, then you open up cash flow for a lot of these companies. Now, these companies are smart. They don't need the government to come in and start penalizing them for, accidents. Because accidents always happen, but they're constantly investing in technology. A lot of the tech that we have today comes from oil and gas. And so when you start hamstringing these people, you're really starting to cut back on forward progress. Now, if you look over the years, oil and gas has come a very long way. and they produce way more responsibly and economically than they did back in the 80s or even back in the 90s. So, and that's of no help to the government. That's just technology, right? Now, I'm in favor of subsidies if it's for future advancement, right? Like technology, like people wanting to try and get a startup in a new way of, let's say, some new drilling technology or a new way to refine, ethylene or something like that to make a new forward progressing material. I'm all for subsidies for that. I mean, that is awesome. It really kicks the progress into high gear. If private investors won't do it, then hey, if it's for the betterment of mankind, then yeah, let's get the, if there's some government money to do it, then absolutely. Am I in favor of private subsidies? No. So I think if you take the government's restrictions and things out of, let's say, even oil and gas, they don't really need government subsidies. Those guys are making money just fine. But if you're going to be fining them all day long for a pump going down and they flare out for 30 minutes and then you're going to fine them $300,000 for it, then yes, they're absolutely going to want to recoup some of that money in the form of subsidies. These guys are getting penalized for providing a service to us and to the United States government. So that's what I'm in favor for as far as subsidies.
Another thing about subsidies, when I was growing up, there was always a sunset on subsidies. That doesn't seem the case anymore. Wind and solar, some companies, they've been getting subsidies for 20 years. I've been hearing about the terawatt of storage for solar for a long time. My whole lifetime, I've been hearing about the terawatt of storage. I don't think we're there yet. Before we jumped on this recording, I mentioned that I'm not a big favor of wind energy. And the reason I'm not a big favor of wind energy as far as commercially is because I believe it's only works individually. When you take a look at the Amish can, with their neighbors or their family, they can put up a windmill in a weekend. And all of a sudden, after a weekend, they have a power to a pole barn if they want, and they have water. That is an incredible return on your investment. You can actually power your place. Limited, for livestock and a few other things. And you can also get running water out of the deal. And that's a great return. The windmills that we have today have not returned on the investment. They've almost extinct the Golden Eagle in the Southwest. In Germany, they found out 85% of the insects in the farm fields that are littered with these wind turbines. I'm sorry, the wind turbines are killing 85% of the insects out there, which is a pollinator, which impacts our agriculture. And then even more so, the bats. The bats are considered very important to agriculture. And many of the bats, they get attracted to the sonar or the noise coming from the wind turbines. So wind energy on a mass scale not only has cost the taxpayers billions in subsidies, it's actually making us go backwards in energy, wildlife, and many other areas, and agriculture, yet that doesn't get discussed because the government likes to control the conversation too. Talk to me about the sunsetting of subsidies. Should we just, Tesla, should we just give Tesla $1 billion a year for the rest of his life because he's Tesla? Or should we say, you know what? If you can't make it work after 5 years, I don't think you're the right person for this. Talk to me a little bit about subsidies and whether we should have sunset laws in place or any sort of timelines, or should we just have kind of the appointed kings of the new world?
Well, that's a very good question. And I think that a lot of companies these days run right on the ragged edge of financial responsibility. So, take like Boeing. Anytime something happens, it's like every other week you hear of them almost filing bankruptcy, or companies are not being fiscally responsible anymore, and they are almost dependent on the government for a bailout. And that's mine and your money that's paying for these companies that are operating, in my opinion, borderline irresponsibly. But if you want to look at Elon Musk, I mean, the guy is inventing a lot of tech, a lot of forward progress technology. He's got a totally different type of booster on his little rockets, and look at that, the AI that he's developed. You look at the auto driving technology that will probably be heavily used in the future. It'll probably be on just about everything that we have. So, I mean, the guy is making some really good tech. Are we ready for it yet? Absolutely not. So everything has its limits, and I am 100% in favor of, you don't need government subsidies for your entire span of operation. If you do need it, then you have a bad business model. The market doesn't dictate it, and we need to find something else.
Former mayor of Bismarck, Steve Bakken, I he often has said that, 5 years, after 5 years, if you can't make it work, you don't get any more subsidies. And then on the flip side of that, the Republican governor of North Dakota, Doug Burgum, who was rumored to be President Trump's VP, vice president, probably going to be Secretary of State now, as from reported in The Hill. He's got a company called the Kilbourne Group, and they flat out say during public meetings, without the government subsidies, our project doesn't work. And that was, a lot of Democrats will point at that, even a lot of Republicans will point at that. But just kind of juxtapositioning two Republicans there. One is saying, hey, after 5 years, if it doesn't work, on the subsidy, not necessarily the company, but the subsidy. Whereas the other Republicans saying, no, we need them, otherwise we're not going to do it. That's a tough place to be in, especially when it's coming from the same party, Richard.
It sure is. And the reason for, not everything is subsidized, and there's a reason for that. Apple doesn't need
Right, you and
subsidies.
I are not. Yeah, you and I aren't subsidized. Just kidding.
Exactly. And if you look at things, like Apple's not subsidized, but everybody is buying Apple. And so that's the reason that they don't need the subsidies in the first place, right? They're not heavily taxed. They provide a good service to the people that want their product, and there's hundreds of millions around the world that do. If you're trying to do a niche market, let's say a special type of knee brace, well, if there's 50 people, or let's say 100 people in the United States that would actually need this knee brace, of course that person cannot afford to stay in business. And without government subsidies, he would 100% go under. And then those 100 people would have nothing. And everybody that comes after them would have nothing. So in that instance, would I advocate for keeping that alive? Absolutely. Because people are going to need it, but there's not a huge demand for it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know
So
what you're saying.
if it actually provides something that people need, and only, like, there's no need for two people to make it because one person is going to go out of business himself trying to do it, then it's absolutely necessary for the well-being of somebody. Then yes, a government subsidy should be needed. But if 500 people can do the same thing and 499 of them don't need subsidies to survive, why should the number 500, get it? So that's where I'm drawing the line. If something is actually viable and they're turning a profit. They should not need government subsidies.
You bring up a great company, Apple. I'm a big fan of Apple, and I understand that they've changed through the years and they've got some, human rights issues over in China and a number of things. And I'll give Steve Jobs credit. He flat out said, if you want an iPhone for the price it's at, it has to be made in China. So that was one of the things I always respected about Steve Jobs was he made tough decisions and stood behind them. And he always had, in my opinion, a net positive for America, whether it be on the economic side or the technology side or whatever it is. But the reason I bring up Apple to kind of talk about, to add some context to what you brought up, Apple started in a garage. They didn't start with a government subsidy. They did not have the ability to get a $250,000 salary because the government subsidies. They started in a garage. All of a sudden, an investor came up and went, you know what? You guys really have something here. I want to dump some money into this. And they didn't start spending money till they made it. They lived within their means. So many of these companies, they pay themselves $250,000, $500,000, plus they've got two or three homes that they need to pay for. Then they'll go out and they'll rent office space. Their overhead is so enormous out of the gate. That to me is one of the biggest problems that I believe the government should be saying, no, you can pay yourself 10% more than what your bills are. How's that? And by the way, if you own three homes, you don't need government subsidies. That to me is one of the biggest issues right now. In fact, in North Dakota yesterday, I've been getting texts all morning. Morton County rejected a direct air carbon project because the commissioners started looking into the company. Well, it turns out this American company was actually founded by a Swiss investment fund who also has an Israeli board of director type person involved. Another major investor is from Israel. So I guess from the top down, you start with Switzerland, then you go to Israel, then you go to the American CEO and the COO, right? So the COO and the CEO are the ones that are public. You have to go into FCC filings and SEC, sorry, not FCC. You have to go into the dirty dredges to find out these different things. And when you take a look at, okay, well, one's got a home in Florida, the other one's got a home in Colorado and California. That's interesting. Okay. And they're asking for all these subsidies. So, and it even got to the point to where they were trying to put this up in something that was zoned agriculture so they could get agriculture subsidies too. So God bless those state representatives on a local level that did their social media sleuthing or whatever you want to call it to find out what was the real deal. And literally in 24 hours, that project went from like a unanimous green light to a unanimous get out of our state. And I think a lot of that's happening to where you have these companies that are being started by people just looking for themselves, looking how they can make money. Not everybody, but there is a lot of them doing it. And like Royal Dutch Shell and British Petroleum, some of these America, even though they appear they're from America, and they're using American subsidies. So I'm not trying to get into anti this, anti that. I'm just trying to do facts are facts and how things are represented. So I'm not sure why I brought that up, but part of it is, living within your means. Part of it is, being transparent. And to me, I don't think the government is doing a very good job of making companies. I think it's working against them, Richard. I really do.
Well, it really is, and you can even look at the COVID money. How many billions and billions of dollars have they found now that were abused, misspent, went to companies that didn't really need it? I know, like, was it like $4 billion went directly to overseas companies? It's a lot of it is the fraud, waste, and abuse. You know, the government is way too easy with our tax dollars, handing out subsidies, you know, bailouts, which I'm not a fan of in any way, shape, or form. So I would really like to see some of that, you know, reform come in these next 4 years.
Be nice if the government would actually take care of our firefighters and our veterans. You know, I mean, 80, you're talking about 65 to 80% of volunteer, our firefighters are still volunteer in this country, basic fire protection volunteers. And then our veterans, a lot of them are homeless out on the street. And we just saw a record number of immigrants come into the country illegally and actually get money. And that's not a political statement. That's a very sad statement.
Yeah, I mean that is a fact. You can look here at my local level in Houston, Harris County, and you know we have last I heard we had 2,700 veterans on the streets here in Harris County. The county doesn't give them any money. They don't help, but apparently we have $85 million to paint murals on the sides of buildings to fight crime. And so
Wow.
the misappropriation of funds by the government, local, state, and federal need some serious reform, and people need to be held accountable. And I think that needs to happen, whether you're oil and gas or whether you're one of these so-called green renewable energy companies. It needs to happen across the board.
One thing that scares me is that I grew up in Fargo. Fargo was a test market. We had vanilla Coke before anybody. We had 75 cent USA Today's when the rest of the country was 50 cents. There's the old saying, play it in Peoria. Peoria, Illinois was a big test market for a long time. In fact, our local newspaper was even a test market for Tide detergent and Time magazine, where the newspaper carriers were delivering them instead of the U.S. Post Office, because the newspaper could do it for 10 cents, whereas the post office would charge a quarter, 35 cents. When I take a look at New York City, I'm sorry, New York State, California, those are the coasts. And then I take a look at Colorado. Jared Polis wrote a book, Governor Jared Polis, big blue extreme Democrat, self-proclaimed, calls he actively called war on oil and gas part of his campaign. So I mean, when the actual candidate says war on oil and gas, I feel okay saying that he waged war on oil and gas. He wrote a book called Colorado Blueprint, which talked about getting rid of oil and gas. I see Colorado being the new test market for energy, and then they use the coast, California and New York, to circle the wagons and bring it home. I want your opinion, your thoughts, and just your observations on my comment I just said about California be, or I'm sorry, Colorado being the new test market for energy. And by the way, energy mean public perception too. And then once they figure out what that is, it almost seems like they just ramrod it in California and New York, because if you get California and New York, my God, that's like 40% of the nation. If you get Texas, that's 60%. Three states, you know?
Well, so I 100% agree with you about Colorado. Colorado is going very liberal with their energy stance. I don't know if you remember when they were talking about banning gas stoves here recently. I think it was about a year and a half ago, something like that.
I do.
The company that actually put that out, I can't remember their exact name. I'll have to get back with you on that. But they came out of Colorado, and they have this place is very liberal. Half of the people on their board are professors at like Texas A&M and Colorado State and places like that. So I'll God, that really bugs me. I can't remember the name of it, but that organization is the one that wrote the article that went viral and got the government looking into banning gas stoves. And the funny thing about it is they are almost 100% funded from China. I looked into a bunch of their financials, and most of their money comes from China. So you are 100% right about Colorado going, being a test model for these liberal energy policies, because I'm seeing more and more evidence of it coming out by the day.
Should mention
But so
too,
is Rocky Mountain Institute. I forgot. There it is.
Rocky Mountain Institute. Okay,
Rocky Mountain Institute.
Colorado State, that's in Fort Collins, which is a stone's throw from Greeley. Greeley, of course, Weld County, the number one oil and gas producing, or gas produce oil producing in the nation. I think Grand Junction might on the west side might have more natural gas because that's there's a natural gas spring there or whatever they're called, it just keeps coming out. In fact, that I believe that's why the BLM put their office there was because that natural gas, that's going to keep coming out of the earth, whether people like it or not. And that's an interesting part too, because a lot of the oil that they find in the ocean is still leaking out of the ground, the Jed Clampett oil.
Sure.
That's always my favorite argument with a lot of environmentalists, like, so should we just let the oil keep just coming out, or you want to suck it out and do something with it? I mean, because it's going to come no matter what. The earth doesn't listen to you. The sun doesn't listen to you. Nevertheless, I do
Well,
want to get back to the, go ahead. Go ahead.
it's the same thing, here in Texas, so I think I counted they have seven people on their advisory board that are professors here at Texas universities, and I think four of them were from Texas A&M. So Texas A&M puts out the largest group of chemical and mechanical engineers in the country, and most of these guys are going to work in the oil and gas plants, in the refineries, in the midstream. And so that is what I find appalling, is that they're sticking these liberal professors into our education system here in Texas to help sway the vote from oil and gas and start pumping out some of these green people.
Going back to ESG, environmental social governance, which is taking off in Europe, Australia, Africa, most of the countries across the planet are developing ESG. China's another one. And ESG comes with an ESG score, which is a lot like a credit score, but for corporations. And again, anytime you've got a score, it's subjective. Like, what is it? Chocolate is like worse than diamonds. As far as chocolate is like one of the worst human rights industries, like it's slave labor and children, whereas a lot of the minerals that are mined in third world countries, it's still, a lot of blood diamonds and that sort of thing. So a chocolate company will have a better score than Exxon or Apple, for example. And that's atrocious, for example, just one example. So when you take a look at ESG, a lot of it's about controlling the marketplace through finance, through Wall Street.
Yes.
One of my issues with ESG is that it's environmental social governance. Very, it mirrors religion. It mirrors morals. And so now, when you have scores starting to dictate morality, you've got bankers starting to dictate morality, and we have this new marketplace being ushered in by carbon. That's a little concerning to me because I was a altar boy. I taught Sunday school for 8 years. I was baptized a Catholic. I went to private school. I am currently ordained as a minister, so I can actually do wedding ceremonies and funerals and et cetera. And in the book of Revelations, it does warn about the mark of the beast, and it gives a number, 666. And for me, that really sent a chill down my spine when we started getting into this carbon market, and when I started seeing the carbon become in control of the economy, which is our bartering system. Because when you take a look at the carbon weight, it's 666. Six electrons, six protons, six neutrons. That's a little too close of a prophecy for me, Richard, for my Catholic upbringing. I was spoon-fed fear and guilt here. Talk me down, Richard. Talk me down.
Well, so, I mean, you're absolutely right. ESG is... How do I explain this? It is corporate financial.
It sounds great in a vacuum. It's like religion. It sounds fantastic in a vacuum, but you have to put it into practice, and you have to understand free will. God gave us free will. If we want to go jump in a volcano, we can. Okay. And you know, there's a lot that goes to this. Things don't work in a vacuum. That is, communism works in theory until it gets applied into humans. And then they realize, oh, the problem with communism is humans. Oh, okay. I mean, to me, how have we not learned this lesson? I just don't get it.
So to protect, especially small businesses here in Texas, I actually had written legislation, House Bill 3661, here in Texas. I introduced it, got it co-sponsored. Thanks to Dade Phelan, we could never get it out of committee, but it would force banks, every financial institution in Texas that lends money, to disclose any ESG, lending practices to the comptroller so that we could actually get rid of ESG in the financial system here in Texas.
Jason Isaac from he's called the Carbon King, you know, because he's, and that's jokingly, but he was responsible for architecting some ESG policy or legislation for the state. And we've talked to him multiple times about the different ESG legislation and a few things along those lines. He mirrors a lot of what you're talking about. And I do like to try to, you know, as we kind of wrap up and get, you know, near the end of the interview, I do like to try to bring it home and talk about some solutions here, because some people listening might be like, boy, these two guys are just complaining left and right. Yeah, they got good points. And holy crap, that 666 thing, I never thought of that before. And they're Google searching the atomic weight of carbon right now and et cetera. But what's the solution to all this? To me, the solution is always free market, because a good capitalist will do exactly what Guinness Beer did. Guinness Beer made a fortune in Ireland. And when the famines came and when the problems came, they invested back in their community like a tithe almost, because they understood they didn't make their fortune without everybody in this community drinking Guinness beer. And a good capitalist will always give back to their community, and they'll always give back to their church. And maybe it's a nonprofit or it's a social cause, but to me, it's always the free market and a good capitalist that can solve these problems. Now, that's easier said than done. Again, that's in a vacuum, but do you see a solution here? Do you see any solutions, or are we just going to have gridlock and polarizing politics for the rest of our lives?
Well, I mean, we have to get rid of the government overreach, and that means deregulation. So when you deregulate, that frees up capital and it makes it completely competitive. And so in a free market, when you have a free competition, it naturally brings the prices down and everybody's going to thrive. So when you put the scale of the government, the thumb of the government on the scale, and you start overregulating, you start fining, you know, they're ramping up the fines. I think I read somewhere that Exxon last year, 2022, paid like $2.1 billion in fines to the government just for operating. When you start getting rid of all of that stuff, it really starts promoting competition. And so when this competition happens, then you have a free capitalist society and the market is going to explode. And so I really think that that is the solution, is to get the government back where it's supposed to be and just providing oversight, and quit with all these unnecessary regulations and fines and dictates and mandates and all these sorts of things. Let the people do what they do. They refine, they innovate, they research, and everything will happen and progress as it should, and faster.
The Crude Life, one of the media brands that we operate here, we recently, because our growth has been so fantastic over the last decade, we stick to a lot of non-polarizing oil and gas news. And you and I are talking a little bit of politics, but it's more about policy and that sort of thing. We're not trying to really get into, call it Kamala Harris, XYZ, or Trump and XYZ, that type of thing. And if we do, we're saying, well, she wants to dehumanize or depopulate the planet and give examples. So we have been very honored that our non-polarizing content has grown the way it has, to the tune to where Paramount Plus reached out to us because of the size of our audience and because of our content, and we struck a content and distribution agreement with them. So I'm asking guests if they have any favorite oil and gas movies or energy movies. We're going to start a new segment on This Week in Energy where we talk about movies and different types, kind of give movie reviews, if you will. And for one of my favorite is There Will Be Blood, for a variety of reasons. But do you have any oil and gas movies, or Dallas, or any oil and gas pop culture that you love, that you want to kind of give a plug for or talk about?
Not really, but going back to my roots, urban cowboy, he starts off working maintenance out in the plants, and that's exactly where I got my start. So every time I see that movie, I kind of get a little chuckle.
Urban Cowboy, that's with John Travolta, right?
Yes, sir.
Wasn't that the first X-rated movie or NC-17 movie? It's at some I did I am I history right on that today? It was a
Oh,
little
I have.
it was an adult movie, right?
An adult movie?
No, I mean, like, it was for adults. It wasn't meant for kids. Not like porn, no.
Yes,
Not porn.
It's an adult movie in that sense.
Yeah, I do think it was the first NC-17 movie, actually, that they had to do a new rating for that movie, if my memory serves me correct on that, because I took some film classes and in college and everything along those lines. But have you ever seen There Will Be Blood?
I have not.
Oh, that's a must watch. That is one of the best oil and gas movies I've ever seen, because it shows how this oil magnate tycoon icon, whatever you want to call him, how he ha he solves these problems, and he does it in a variety of different ways. And he's got a pretty ruthless personality, but back in those days, you had to, you weren't messing around. And I don't know, I grew up in agriculture, so agriculture is extremely dangerous. In fact, it was the most dangerous industry my whole lifetime. And between the rollovers on tractors and springs going out and augers and people falling in grain bins, and there's a variety of different ways. And when I got into the energy industry, the oil and gas industry, that was one of the first things I noticed was, yeah, I get that this is a dangerous industry, but man, how proactive the industry tries to be. And when they miss a thing from time to time, and something new happens, like a blowout in, the BP blowout in the Gulf of Mexico, for example. Man, think of how many lives were saved after that. Think of how many blowouts were prevented after that. Because I got news for you folks. You ain't going to bat 1,000%. You ain't going to bat 100%. Every now and then a puck goes through the goal. That, it happens. How do you react to it? How do you take on the responsibility from there? That was one of the things I took away from There Will Be Blood. And few and far between. But I'd recommend that movie to you, Richard. Check it out if you have a chance. It is actually available on Paramount Plus. And if you use our link, you can get a very good discount on the deal. But do you have a organization or company you'd like to plug or anything like that?
I'm actually starting my own advocacy group called Carbon Power. I expect the paperwork to be finalized here any day, getting it back from the FEC. So I hope to be launching that here fairly soon.
Excellent. And what's it going to be doing? What is the kind of the mission of Carbon Power?
I'm going to be advocating for oil and gas companies. I'm actually getting into lobbying. Yes, sir. So we can start getting some good legislation going in a lot of these oil and gas states. And I hope to end the pipeline discrimination. So I know like in North Dakota, there was a carbon capture pipeline being brought within 50 or 100 feet of an elementary school. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of carbon capture pipelines are getting priorities over natural gas pipelines. So I'm going to hope to get rid of the discrimination and get rid of a lot of the regulation and really get oil, gas, and coal going.
The Midwest Carbon Express Pipeline being spearheaded by one of the big issues with that is the Chinese ownership. There is a 25% Chinese ownership in that through TP Rise. And there's also a Korean company that has a major ownership in it as well. John Deere is also one of the owners, and people are very upset with John Deere right now because they announced that they're going to be basically going into robotics and they are moving to Mexico for their robotics type thing. So the carbon pipeline in the Midwest up there has gotten a lot of bad PR because of their bedfellows. Let's just put it that way. That makes sense to you. There's a lot of people that do not care that the majority of the percentages are now out of country companies that are going to be influencing this carbon and for a variety of reasons. So, well, I'll tell you what, man, feel free to lean on us. Anytime you want to get on the air, we'll certainly do our best to get you on there and get the rational, level-headed person. You take my slings, no problem. You don't have any issue taking hard questions on because you're looking at the bigger picture and the end goal. And to me, that's what leaders need to do. There are people that'll take care of the detail work, but who the heck is going to drive that ship? Who's going to keep an eye on that end goal? So feel free to lean on us, sir.
I appreciate it.